On this 25th day of January 2012 in San Diego, we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in Chapter 7, entitled Knowledge of the Absolute, and we are reading text number 23. Antavattupalam tesham tanbavatyalpamedasam Devan devayajo yanti madbhakta yanti mamapi. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Those who worship the demigods go to the planets of the demigods, but my devotees ultimately reach my supreme planet. Purport. Some commentators on the Bhagavad Gita say that one who worships a demigod can reach the Supreme Lord. But here it is clearly stated that the worshippers of demigods go to the different planetary systems where various demigods are situated, just as a worshipper of the sun achieves the sun, or a worshipper of the demigod of the moon achieves the moon. Similarly, if anyone wants to worship a demigod like Indra, he can attain that particular god's planet. It is not that everyone, regardless of whatever demigod is worshipped, will reach the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is denied here. For it is clearly stated that the worshippers of demigods go to different planets in the material world, but the devotee of the Supreme Lord goes directly to the Supreme Planet of the Personality of Godhead. Here the point may be raised that if the demigods are different parts of the body of the Supreme Lord, then the same end should be achieved by worshipping them. However, worshippers of the demigods are less intelligent because they don't know to what part of the body food must be supplied. Some of them are so foolish that they claim that there are many parts and many ways to supply food. This isn't very sanguine. Can anyone supply food to the body through the ears or eyes? They do not know that these demigods are different parts of the universal body of the Supreme Lord. And in their ignorance, they believe that each and every demigod is a separate god and a competitor of the Supreme Lord. Not only are the demigods parts of the Supreme Lord, but ordinary living entities are also. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that the Brahmins are the head of the Supreme Lord. The Kshatriyas are his arms, the Vaishyas are his waist, the Shudras are his legs, and all serve different functions. Regardless of the situation, if one knows that both the demigods and he himself are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, his knowledge is perfect. But if he does not understand this, he achieves different planets where the demigods reside. This is not the same destination the devotee reaches. The results achieved by the demigods' benedictions are perishable because within this material world, the planets, the demigods, and their worshippers are all perishable. Therefore, it is clearly stated in this verse that all results achieved by worshipping demigods are perishable, and therefore such worship is performed by the less intelligent living entity. Because the pure devotee engaged in Krishna consciousness in devotional service of the Supreme Lord achieves eternal blissful existence that is full of knowledge, his achievements are those of the common worshipper of the demigods are different. His achievements and those of the common worshipper of the demigods are different. The Supreme Lord is unlimited. His favor is unlimited. His mercy is unlimited. Therefore, the mercy of the Supreme Lord upon his pure devotees is unlimited. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chukshu Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So this is the last of these four verses that Krishna speaks in the seventh chapter, decrying, deriding, criticizing, discouraging the worship of the demigods. You may recall, back in text 19, Krishna said that one who is truly in knowledge surrenders to me. That knowledge may take births, many births to acquire, bohunam jamanamante gyanavan mampapadide. He surrenders unto me, understanding that I, Vasudev, am everything. Now, if Krishna is everything, it means that whatever there is in existence is coming from him, and therefore any benedictions that we desire ultimately come from him. So why go to some subordinate person? You see? So then after that he says, but someone whose knowledge is stolen away by material desire, kamaistaista rita jnana, means the knowledge is taken away or covered, We're on text 23. So if one's knowledge is taken away by material desire, material desire covers our real knowledge. So in this case, he says all kinds of desires, kama istaishta rita jnana, papadyante anya devata. They worship other gods besides me. They think that they're independent of me. They think that, oh, if I need strength, sexual strength, I'll worship Indra. If I want a good wife, I'll worship Uma. If I want health, I should worship Surya. I can't just go to Krishna, because, these other gods are also gods, as Prabhupada says here. They're not demigods, they're gods. So this is ignorance, but someone whose knowledge is covered, they believe like that, so they worship different gods. Now, in the process of doing that, you need faith, right? They have to have. So Krishna provides the faith also. That's the second verse in the series here. That's text 21, right? I am in everyone's heart as a super soul. As soon as one desires to worship some demigod, I make his faith steady so that he can devote himself to that particular deity. Now, how does that pertain to us? Is anyone here attracted to worship Chandi?
No.
Okay. Ganesh, maybe?
No.
No. Okay. But, this principle of worship extends to everything. And that, what I mean by that is that we come from a society that worships the material energy, that worships science and technology as the giver of all benefits in this world. You see? And if you want to worship matter, then Krishna will make your faith strong in matter also. You see, that's the point. Is this pertains to us, and you'll get some benefits. Look at the benefits. All these gadgets, the computers, the weapons, the indoor plumbing. I mean, that's all a result of, somebody thought about it and they arranged the material energy and created the technology. Now we take it for granted. Electricity. What do we need to worship Surya for? We just turn on the switch, get the light. You see, so this is even more ignorance. In other words, but the faith is there, and ultimately, as Krishna says, and then he says, with that faith, you worship the gods or you worship matter, and you get some benediction. But they're actually coming from me. People don't realize that. Just like the power is coming from the powerhouse, right? But you don't think about it. You switch on the light and it says, oh, it happened. You just don't think about it, right? But that's really where it's coming from. Where's the powerhouse getting the power? From the sun. Where's the sun getting the power? From Krishna. You see? It's all coming from Krishna, but people don't make that connection. And so we're looking at subordinate sources of benediction as the ultimate benediction. We're forgetting the source. And so the result of that, first he says, those who do this are Alpamedasam. Alpamedasam means not very smart. They're not intelligent, for whatever reason, but they're not. And the reason is that they're antavatu palamtesham. And this takes us back. What this means is that their fruits, whatever they may get, are temporary. But we ourselves are eternal. We need permanent fruits. We need permanent benediction. We as spirit souls have needs which are not at all met by the temporary benedictions of demigods or anything else. So we're ignoring our real needs and trying to fulfill superficial needs and becoming frustrated. Because it's incompatible. You see the problem there. So this is a basic principle of knowledge in Krishna consciousness. To always be focusing on the ultimate good. What is the ultimate good for ourselves and for others in this world? Not just the temporary good. There are these little phrases that it's worth learning. Not very difficult. Shreyas and Preyas. You know what they are. What is Shreyas and Preyas?
Shreyas is ultimate good and Preyas is just temporary
good. Temporary good. This is such a critical thing. Because everybody is absorbed in the prayas. It may not be, next moment, but at least I'm going to plan out my life, so that I'll get a good education, get a good job, get a good family, and this way I'll be happy in this world. That's all prayas. It may not be instantaneous. The more you come down to the instant, what's good, let me just have fun now, to hell with tomorrow, that's more like animal life. The more you're in the mode of goodness, the more in the mode of ignorance. The more that you plan ahead and try, then you're more in the mode of passion and goodness. But none of it is transcendental. You see what I'm saying? Because ultimately, all your plans are frustrated because they pertain to the body. The body is temporary. So you want it to be happy and secure and peaceful forever, right? The fairy tale, live happily ever after. There's no happily ever after in this material world. So whether it's, you know, today or next week or a month or 10 years or 50 years from now, all of these plans are frustrated. And therefore, he says, ultimatum. And then he has this kind of a QED. You know what a QED is? A QED is like at the end of a proof. It means, thus it's been proved. In a little syllogism. I learned that when I was in high school. It's some Latin phrase. I forget what it stands for. So, devan devi jo yanti man bhakti yanti mamapi. This is the bottom line. Is that whatever you worship, what is worship? Worship is, first of all, you pay attention to something. Then you see that something or entity or person, whatever it is, as able to give you some benediction, some benefit. And then you relate to that thing. You put your energy into it. If it's a person, you worship them, you glorify them, you surrender, you serve, you know, expecting some benediction. The same thing is true for those who worship matter. They put all their attention into it. All their energy. They learn about it. You know, you contemplate, you meditate on it. Figure out how it's working so that you can get, you know, manipulate it and get some benefit from it. So, but here he says the devas, and it certainly those who worship the devas are better off than the out-and-out atheists who just worship matter. But even if you worship the devas, you go to the devas. Whatever you worship, whatever you absorb your mind in, that's going to form your next life. Whatever you have faith in, that's what's going to determine your destiny, your next birth. So then you go to the devas, but their planets are temporary too. Then you've thrown in your lot, you know, with the demigods. But as explained in the purport here, they're just part and parcel of Krishna. You have to understand how this universe works. There's something called the universal form, which is like the whole universe. And it's sometimes thought of as the external body of Krishna. Now, Krishna is completely spiritual, right? But still, we can think of that he also has an external body in the form of this universe, meaning that nothing is independent of his will. Just like our body. Of course, we're not God, so our body sometimes doesn't obey our command. But generally speaking, you know, the hand, you want to do something with the hand and it does it. You want to look this way, that way, you can go here, go there. So in a sense, everything in this mind, it's like a big universe. You know, imagine you're a little bug. There was a movie once, I saw it before I joined when I was a kid, you know, where these scientists, they shrunk down, they went inside the body. Isn't you remember? And you know, there's all these, you know, it's quite an experience. You can imagine going through the arteries, you know, let's go over there. Whoa, what's that big thing? Oh, it's the kidney. How does that work, you know? So just imagine like that. This is Krishna's body. So the mountains there are the bones, you know, and the sun and the moon are the eyes and like that, you know. It's described like that in several places. Now, what does that mean? It means that everything is connected to Krishna. It's not independent. There's nothing, no independence, nothing. So, if you worship, you know, to be blunt, if you worship the kidney, you go to the kidney, you know. But if you worship the person who this is an external body, you go to the person, you go to the spirit, you go to the spiritual world. But here, even the devas, they're also limited and temporary. You know, Indra dies, so does Brahma, even after an inconceivable long time. So why, being eternal souls, would we try to get a situation which is still temporary? That's the whole point. And so madbhakta yanti mamapi. That's the bottom line. You worship me, you come to me. What's the benefit? Eternal life, bliss, and happy spiritual world. No more birth. No more change. It's not temporary. It's not antabhat. And so the whole idea, and this is very radical, because all throughout India. You know, India is great, but you get the best and the worst also, actually. And part of that whole Vedic culture is that the existence of the gods and the worship of the demigods. There are whole parts of the Rig Veda talking about Indra, you know, even in the Bhagavatam. You know, there's a passage in the second canto describing how if you want this, you worship this god. If you want great health, you worship Surya, like that. There's a whole list. But then, Bhagavatam being the Bhagavatam, it doesn't end there. It doesn't really encourage the worship of the gods. But it says, one who's truly intelligent, I think this verse was quoted in one of these purports, akama sarva kama va moksha kama udaradi. Now here's the udaradi, means the intelligent person, rather than the upamedasam, not so intelligent. Tivrena bhakti yogena. Yajeta Purusham Param. The word yajeta means worship or sacrifice. Purusham Param, the supreme person, not the devatas. One who is free of all material desire. That's the devotees. Or full of all kinds of desire. Sarva kama, that word was used at the beginning of this series of verses. Kamaisthaistar. If you're full of all material desires, or free of material desire, or you want liberation. There's those who don't really want anything material, so to speak, but they want liberation. But all of those who are in Dharadi, they should perform intense devotional service to the Supreme Person. In other words, the bottom line is, there's no point in worshiping anyone else but Krishna. Even if you want these other things, still worship Krishna. You'll get it to the degree that is good for your spiritual life. And that's really what counts. What's the point of worshiping someone or something and getting something which keeps you more entangled in this world for more suffering? See, this is Maya. This is why Maya is a cheater. She's giving you a false front. It's just like an advertisement. You know, everybody knows the advertisements are, you know, they don't care to make you happy. You know, but they give that impression that just buy this, come here, do that, you'll be happy. We want to help you, right? But they don't care about you. They're just trying to get your money. So they're trying to tell you, create a, you know, spin a phantasmagoria, a yarn, that if you just buy this thing, you'll be happy. They try to make you unsatisfied with your present condition. I already have a car. Yeah. I got a, 94 Buick. You can have a 2012, Lexus or something. Now I'm not satisfied anymore. The Buick is perfectly fine. Now I'm not satisfied. So the whole idea is to make you unsatisfied so you'll buy into something, thinking you'll be happy. But it just leads to more satisfaction and suffering. We have that experience. That's why we're sitting here. So Krishna is saying this in terms of the Vedic culture now, in terms of worshiping the gods and the devas. So the takeaway from all of these verses is, going back to text 19, those who are truly intelligent, they surrender to Vasudeva exclusively. As Krishna says in the Sarva Dharma, but Mam Ekang Sharanam Vraja, come to me exclusively and surrender to me exclusively. All of your needs will be fulfilled. And only Krishna can fulfill all the needs. He's the only one who can fulfill the spiritual needs. The devas may fulfill some temporary material needs, or the manipulation of nature can fulfill the needs, apparently temporarily. But see the result. See, the result of like the auto industry and this big technology they built up is they're filling the air with carbon dioxide. The climate is obviously being... I was just being distorted. I was just up in L.A. It's like summer day. I don't know, it got as hot. It was like 85 degrees in L.A. I swear, I was outside. I said, what is this? The sun is beating down. It's January, 25th? Yeah. I've never experienced that before. I've been, in Southern California for quite a while now. And things have definitely gotten askew. Who knows what's going to happen in the next 10, 20 years, So because they're it's exaggerated, it's distorted, it's not natural. They're placing their faith in material world and technology. But that's ignorance. So that's the bottom line here for these four verses. Don't worship the gods, worship Krishna, and you will go to Krishna. But it takes, training, because otherwise we can easily get diverted into material. Yeah.
So there's obviously a difference between Krishna and other living entities in their relation to us. Maybe hopefully you can answer this. I was just reading in the 10th canto, the Brahma Vinmohana Lila, where at the end Maharaj Parikshit is asking Shukadev Goswami why the cowherd women and the community loved their own kids more, or loved Krishna, who expanded his own kids, more than their own kids themselves. And Maharaj Shukadev Goswami says it's because Krishna is the self of everyone, ultimately. Even deeper than their own self. But he lays the condition. Because everyone loves their own self more than their expanded property of their false ego.
Right.
Such as nationalism and things like that. The expansion of false ego. They like their own body more. Right. So my question is, we see people who sacrifice for their nation. They actually sacrifice their body they die for their nation.
Right.
The nation is just there. It's like eye and mind. The eye is their body, and the mind, which is considered secondary, is the nation.
Right.
But yet they'll sacrifice their own body for their nation. So how does that connect with his statement?
Well, it's a very good question. So what happens there when people sacrifice? Well, you'll think, you know, a mother sacrificed for a child, you know, or you sacrifice for someone else or something else. It's true, people sacrifice their lives. But what is going on there is that people identify. You know, one is identifying oneself. He's broadened that sense of self to the family, the child, the tribe or the state or even the world. You know, people sacrifice for humanity at large. You know. So. There's still this false sense of self, but it's expanded. In other words, it's still material because you're identifying with other material aspects. But as Prabhupada says in the Nectar Devotion, you don't know where that really can end until you get to Krishna. So, why does one do that? Well, one sees, you know, falsely, one sees in the future, okay, my name will be known. I will be known, you know, as someone who sacrificed. You know, you still have this idea that you will get a benefit for that. You know, I mean, people do that all the time. Okay, I'll give this money, you know, but my name has to be on the building. You know, they're not really doing it selflessly. So, but the principle is that we don't really know who we are until we become Krishna conscious. Because we're, linked up to Krishna. We are part and parcel of Krishna. We are reflections. You know, we're the energy, the sun and the sunshine. Does the sunshine have any meaning without the sun? You know, the sunshine doesn't mean anything. It has a little bit of heat and a little bit of light because the sun has infinite heat and infinite light. Yeah, basically infinite, right? So whatever we think of ourselves as, separate from Krishna, is just an illusion. It's like a masquerade. It's like a dream. This dream analogy is very good. It seems to be real at the time, but then when you wake up, you realize, oh, it's just a dream. You concocted it out of, you know, various parts of your experience, whatever it may be. So, but our actual life, you know, begins as, you know, we really begin living as spiritual beings when we become Krishna conscious and we relate to him as the master, the friend, you know, different rasas. And we're tuned into his desires. Those are actually our innermost desires. Now we're taking the cues for what is good and what our desires are from the gross body and the subtle body. But that's not us. It's other. That's the truly the other. And so the answer to the question was that, well, all love, attraction, is really attraction for Krishna. What you're attracted to in other people or other things is simply a little bit of Krishna's beauty or other form of attractiveness, reflected or refracted, if you will, through the material energy, like the body, you know. You know, there's a certain combination of elements that form another body that attracts us, okay, as a man or a woman. That's given. But what is that really? You know, if you take it apart, it's not attractive. The elements aren't attractive. The blood, the flesh, the bones, that's not attractive. What is it? It's the Krishna-ness coming through. It's a spirit. It's a spirit there with part and parcel of Krishna that's being expressed through that conglomeration called the material body. That is somehow, you know, because Krishna is so attractive, there's a certain element of attraction there. But because it's just a reflection, it easily changes, right? Like a reflection in a pool, you know, it changes from moment to moment. So that's why it's so frustrating in this world. Because the person you're attracted to, they're constantly changing. You're also constantly changing. The beauty that was there now won't be there and, you know, maybe tomorrow or maybe 10 years or that, whatever it is. You know, and it's not just the physical beauty, it's also the personality. Person can change radically, you know. Or who knows, they'll maybe lose a leg in an elevator somewhere or something and suddenly, well, what happened to that graceful walk? They can't dance anymore. You know, it's just the whole thing is, it's so fragile. The attractiveness is so fragile here, you know. That's why to be attracted to Krishna is for good. You know, he never betrays you. You know, he's always attractive. If you can just bring yourself to chant his name, you know, and place your mind on him, you'll be attracted. The soul will be attracted. There's no question about it. So in this pastime, it's such a wonderful thing. Krishna, out of his mercy, he gave all of these mothers and the cows the chance to have this intimate relationship, suckling him and fondling him. They didn't know it, but it's pure spirit. All the calves were Krishna, all the boys were Krishna, you know. So the mother's love for their children was also there, obviously. But what are they loving? They're loving the Krishna-ness. So when it's pure, solid Krishna, naturally it's going to increase. It's a wonderful thing. All right, let's do another one. Text 24. Avyaktam vyaktam apannam manyante mama buddhayah padam bhavma jananto mamavya manuttamam. Unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, was impersonal before, and have now assumed this personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. So we're going to read this purport. It's kind of long, and then we'll do it again on Monday. It definitely merits some more attention. This verse is often quoted by Prabhupada in combating the Mayavadis. This is one of these anti-Mayavadi verses right here in the... you know, the Mayavadis are impersonalists who deride the personality of Krishna. Purport. Those who are worshippers of demigods have been described as less intelligent persons, and here the impersonalists are similarly described. Abuddhaya, the last in the end of the first line there. Lord Krishna, in his personal form, is here speaking before Arjuna, and still, due to ignorance, impersonalists argue that the Supreme Lord ultimately has no form. Yamanacharya, a great devotee of the Lord in the disciplic succession of Ramanujacharya, has written a very appropriate verse in this connection. He says, Tvam shila rupa charitai padama prakrishtai satvena sadrakataya prabalaischa shastrai and prakyata daiva padamata vidamataischa naivasada prakataya prabhavanti bodhun. My dear Lord, devotees like Vyasadeva and Narada know you to be the personality of Godhead. By understanding different Vedic literatures, one can come to know your characteristics, your form, and your activities. And one can thus understand that you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But those who are in the modes of passion and ignorance, the demons, the non-devotees, cannot understand you. They are unable to understand you. However expert such non-devotees may be in discussing Vedanta and the Upanishads and other Vedic literatures, it is not possible for them to understand the personality of God. And this is Stotra or Ratna 12. In the Brahma Sanghita, it is stated that the personality of God, it cannot be understood simply by study of the Vedanta literature. Only by the mercy of the Supreme Lord can the personality of the Supreme be known. Therefore, in this verse, it is clearly stated that not only are the worshippers of the demigods less intelligent, but those non-devotees who are engaged in Vedanta and speculation on the Vedic literature without any tinge of true Krishna consciousness are also less intelligent. And for them, it is not possible to understand God's personal nature. Persons who are under the impression that the absolute truth is impersonal are described as abuddhaya, which means those who do not know the ultimate feature of the absolute truth. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that supreme realization begins from the impersonal Brahman and then rises to the localized supersoul, but the ultimate word in the absolute truth is the personality of Godhead. But modern impersonalists are still less intelligent, for they do not even follow their great predecessor, Shankaracharya, who has specifically stated that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. Impersonalists, therefore, not knowing the supreme truth, think Krishna to be only the son of Devaki and Vasudev, or a prince, or a powerful living entity. This is also condemned in the Bhagavad Gita 9:11, Avajananti mamudha manushim tanam ashritam. Only the fools regard me as an ordinary person. The fact is that no one can understand Krishna without rendering devotional service and without developing Krishna consciousness. The Bhagavatam 10.14.29 confirms this. Atapite deva padam bhujadvaya pasara leshanugaita evahi chanati tattvam bhagavan mahimno dachanya eko pichadam vichinvam. My Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. So this is a verse spoken by Lord Brahma, isn't that Brahma Vimohan Lila? His prayers in the next chapters. This is one of them. One cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, or his form, quality, or name simply by mental speculation or by discussing Vedic literature. One must understand him by devotional service. When one is fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, beginning by chanting the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, then only can one understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Non-devotee impersonalists think that Krishna has a body made of this material nature and that all his activities, his form, and everything are Maya. These impersonalists are known as Maya bodies. They do not know the ultimate truth. The 20th verse clearly states, Kamai staista rita jnana papadyante andidevata. Those who are blinded by lusty desires surrender unto the different demigods. It is accepted that besides the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there are demigods who have their different planets, and the Lord also has a planet. As stated in the 23rd verse, Devan devayajo yanti madbhokta yanti mamapi. The worshippers of the demigods go to the different planets of the demigods, and those who are devotees of Lord Krishna go to the Krishna Loka planet. Although this is clearly stated, the foolish impersonalists still maintain that the Lord is formless and that these forms are impositions. From the study of the Gita, does it appear that the demigods and their abodes are impersonal? Clearly, neither the demigods nor Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are impersonal. They are all persons. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he has his own planet, and the demigods have theirs. Therefore, the monistic contention that ultimate truth is formless and that form is imposed does not hold true. It is clearly stated here that it is not imposed. From the Bhagavad Gita, we can clearly understand that the forms of the demigods and the form of the Supreme Lord are simultaneously existing, and that Lord Krishna is Satchidananda, eternal blissful knowledge. The Vedic literature confirms that the Supreme Absolute Truth is knowledge and blissful pleasure. Vijnanam Anandam Brahma, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 3.9.28. And that he is the reservoir of unlimited auspicious qualities, Ananta Kalyana Gunatmakoso, Vishnu Purana 6.5.84. And in the Gita, the Lord says that although he is Aja, unborn, he still appears. These are the facts that we should understand from the Bhagavad Gita. We cannot understand how the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be impersonal. The imposition theory of the impersonalist monist is false as far as the statements of the Gita are concerned. It is clear herein that the Supreme Absolute Truth, Lord Krishna, has both form and personality. Okay, we'll leave it there for now. We're going to read a little bit from the Krishna book, All Glories to Srila Prabhupada.